Good morning. This is Maggie Jones, and this is Natural Wonders. I'll be reading from the book of Field, AFIELD, by Sumner Madison, who has compiled interviews he has conducted with Wisconsin naturalists since 1979. I'll be reading a little bit of Eric Epstein's chapter. I'll tell you more about Sumner and the book at the end of the show, and I will also talk about the effort to bring trumpeter swans back to Wisconsin, in which Sumner played a leading role. Eric lives in Monroe County. He's retired from the Department of Natural Resources, and this is a story about his trip into Bibbon Marsh up in Bayfield County. Years ago, as part of a Lake Superior Basin wetland inventory, I was surveying a remote part of the huge Bibbon Swamp. I had come in from the far southwest side, which is very difficult. It was difficult to the point of stupidity. I think I'm headed for a conifer swamp that is composed of old white cedar, fairly extensive, and thought to be in good condition based on an examination of air photos and forest recon data. To get there, I had to slosh through an extensive swamp of black ash. It's between 4 and 4:30 in the morning and very dark. Well, it's a wet year, and there are pools of standing water between every ash tree. The ashes are all on hummocks. On the sides of each hummock, there is poison ivy everywhere. I know that under these conditions, the oils and compounds from poison ivy are likely to be in the water. I'm already soaked to the gills. I react badly to poison ivy, even worse to poison sumac, though that's a tale for another time. I've given up on wearing a rubber suit to work, so it's old sneakers and jeans and stuff that I don't care much about. I know I'm going to be trashed for probably the rest of the summer because the dermatitis that results from the ivy exposure. But there are some cool birds here. Many northern water thrushes are singing in the ash swamp, along with many other songbirds of the deep woods. The fog is dense. I'm not really trusting my compass, trying to head for what I think is a bend in the White River, which should take me right to my objective, the center of this cedar swamp. But I can't see more than 40 feet in front of me. My pores are open, and I feel as if they're the size of quarters. I know that all of this toxic ivy sap is getting into my head, as well as all over my body, and probably going to make my brain swell and maybe explode. I slog on and stop every 5 minutes or 100 meters to do a breeding bird survey point count, then soldier on. All of a sudden, I'm in the cedars, a beautiful old cedar swamp. The fog is swirling through the trees, and it's starting to get light out, but I still can't really see. It's so very foggy and dim. I'm trying to time my arrival to get the most birdsong and am rewarded with a nice assemblage of wood warblers, northern parulas, Nashvilles, yellow rumps, Canadas, and also yellow-bellied flycatchers, blue-headed vireos, winter wrens, white-throated sparrows, and hermit thrushes. I start looking around through the swirling mist. Then through the cedars, I see a clump of showy lady slippers. I start looking around some more, and there are hundreds of showy lady slippers everywhere, but I can't see very far. Then I notice that what I have initially taken as hummocks of sphagnum moss are instead the carcasses of deer that died during the past winter, a deer graveyard. This had probably been their last chance to find food and escape brutal weather. There must have been 30, 40, 50 deer carcasses within my limited viewshed. So there I am within this gorgeous but eerie forest of old twisted cedars, with the swirling mist soaked to the gills, amid hundreds of clumps of one of our most beautiful native plants. And then there's all this death. Very moving, a dramatic but sobering slice of reality. I've never come across anything like that before. I'd like to tell you a little more about this book. It's written by Sumner Madison, Sumner Matteson. He's currently a biologist with the Department of Natural Resources working with endangered species. When he first moved to Wisconsin, he immediately realized that we have some of the premier wildlife biologists and botanists in the country, And so he started interviewing and recording them. The majority of the 18 chapters in the book are in the person's own words with brief introductions by Sumner. What foresight he had to start this project. Starting in 1979, interviewing Sigurd Olsen, and still working on it today, he plans to publish Volume 2 in early 2023. If you love to see trumpeter swans in our wetlands, you can thank Sumner, who devoted many years to bringing this elegant, huge bird back to grace our landscape. Working with many others, this has been a wildly successful effort. From a September 2019 article on Wisconsin Public Radio about the trumpeter swan recovery effort by Mary K. McCoy, she writes, 30 years ago, Wisconsin Department of Natural Resource biologist Randy Jurowitz and Sumner Madison got on a plane to Fairbanks, Alaska with a goal to bring the trumpeter swan back to Wisconsin. When they reached Alaska by way of businessman Terry Kohler's private jet on June 5, 1989, they had one day to collect eggs in the Alaskan wilderness in an ambitious effort to restore North America's largest waterfowl back to the state. We were carrying these eggs in suitcases with hot water bottles, low-tech but effective, Jurowitz recalled. But the timing was very, very tight, so Terry Kohler, God rest his soul, flew us home overnight, and we arrived in Milwaukee the next morning. According to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service protocol, Jurowitz and Madison had to leave two viable eggs in each nest that they took from. They still managed to collect 60 eggs that year. That effort has led to a population of nearly 6,000 trumpeter swans in Wisconsin today. A century ago, there were none left in Wisconsin, and by 1932, only about 69 remained in the entire continental United States. Years of overhunting had brought the waterfowl from numbers around 130,000 east of the Rockies, pre-colonization, nearly to extinction. Skins were ground into powder puffs, and feathers were used to adorn fashionable women's hats. The numbers depleted rapidly between 1823 and 1837, Madison said. Prior to efforts to reestablish the bird, which has a wingspan of more than 6 feet and weighs more than 25 pounds, had failed in Wisconsin. So in the late 1980s, Wisconsin DNR biologists looked to Minnesota for guidance. We had just received legislative authority to have an endangered resources fund in Wisconsin, funded by an income tax checkoff, Jurowitz said. Minnesota's DNR had already gone to Alaska to retrieve trumpeter swan eggs and were successfully establishing them in Minnesota. Jurowitz and Madison learned to determine whether eggs were viable using a device called a candler loaned to them by the Minnesota DNR. When they returned to Wisconsin, they incubated the eggs at the Milwaukee County Zoo. The recovery objective was 20 breeding and migratory pairs by the year 2000. For a while, between 1997 and 2000, we were lingering at about 17 or 18 pairs. That took off in the year 2000. We had 44 that year, and since then, it has been a straight climb almost to the present number. The largest populations of the bird are currently concentrated in the northwestern part of Wisconsin, but it's found in about 30 counties around the state. Nationally, there are three main populations of trumpeter swans in North America, adding up to about 63,000 birds. The interior population, including Wisconsin, Rocky Mountain, and Pacific Coast. It's extremely gratifying and very rewarding, Madison said. It's really been a team effort. Many public and private partnerships have made this all possible. Thanks for listening today to Natural Wonders. This is Maggie Jones.